Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Round 2 of Easy, Netflix's acclaimed anthology series set in Chicago, is underway. Creator, producer, writer, and director Joe Swanberg joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Are smart TV sets and devices, increasingly with artificial intelligence built in, triggering the age of interactive TV at last? We'll learn later this hour from Interactive TV Day overseer Tracy Swerlo, whose annual TV of Tomorrow Show conference happens in the Big Apple next week. Also ahead, All Deaf Comedy All Set, 25 Days of Christmas Multiplied, East World Tide Closes for Good, and Stranger Things Keep Happening. Yeah, I'm singing that Nancy and Spencer song. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, and distributed on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Arlo.com, proud development partner of the 2017 New York Television Festival, and the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy start of December 2017 to you and all, and welcome to the program All About Television. We have a great hour in store for you, some super guests from Chicago and here in New York, and we invite you to be part of the program. 51 degrees at the top of the hour, and here's how you get involved. Pick up the phone and dial in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio. We've got our chat room open for business. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, SimonApple04 by name. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Joel Swanberg joins us live from Chicago after these news notes. All Deaf Comedy is cleared to debut tonight on HBO, but there's one change. Russell Simmons' appearance during tonight's opening episode was edited out and his name removed from the credits. The All Deaf executive producer stepped down from his entertainment empire yesterday following publication of a column in the Hollywood Reporter declaring that he engaged in sexual misbehavior with Jenny Lumet, the daughter of iconic director Sidney Lumet, when she was 24. HBO also has severed its program development arrangement with Simmons. All Deaf Comedy 6 episodes will play on HBO through the end of December. Stranger Things will move into a third season on Netflix next year. The popular drama of adventures in Hawkins, Indiana during the 1980s released its second season 2 months ago and earned 5 Emmy Awards for its first season this past summer. 25 Days of Christmas as of today is no longer a one-channel affair. ABC, Disney Channel, Disney XD, and Disney Junior are joining Freeform in running holiday-centric movies, animated specials, and original programs in prime time through Christmas Day. Some content will appear in rotation among all 5 channels, while each service will keep a few highlights to itself. ABC, for example, will run new seasons of The Great Christmas Life Fight and The Great American Baking Show exclusively. And earlier today on Good Morning America, Freeform, an ABC-owned network, announced that it will offer a home for the holidays to a deserving person, with that home for the holidays being announced on GMA later this month. And tonight marks the final chapter of Hulu's award-winning original East Low Tide, featuring a lot of Latino cast and production team. The series dramatizes goings-on at East Los Angeles High School. Hulu calls this concluding chapter a finale event, with bachata performer Prince Royce appearing in a guest role. And that is news notes for today. Just when you thought all anthology series were about things happening year after year after year, along comes the return of the weekly anthology, the way anthology series were supposed to be, where every week, new characters, new storylines, sometimes with a given theme, like westerns or science fiction or horror. Netflix has been a big innovator in bringing back the original anthology show in its original format, with such things as the Emmy Award-winning Black Mirror, and also a program set in Chicago called Easy, where every episode is all about some unique characters in Chicago dealing with issues of love, sex, technology, and culture. The second season of Easy premiered earlier today, and as Netflix likes to say, same city, new positions. Joining us live from the Windy City in an air raid exclusive, the founder, creator, producer, writer, and director of Easy, Joe Swanberg. Joe, good to have you with us.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
What's been the reaction so far to season 2?
I do not know. I woke up a few hours ago. I was up late last night, and now I am just beginning to start my day. So probably when I I'm finished talking to you. I will go online and brace myself for the reaction.
Mm-hmm. How different is this season from season one? What did you decide to tackle in this particular set of 8 episodes they didn't do in the first season last year?
Well, I feel like the first season was very heavily focused on couples and their sexual dynamics. And I would say in a broad stroke, this new season is a little more focused on communities maybe, or, you know, sort of people outside of the orbit of a, you know, two-person couple. So there's the stories are on a little bit of a bigger canvas, slightly more ensemble-based. And we're taking on ideas like capitalism, monogamy, religion, some things that we weren't really touching on in season one. But then we're also kind of doubling back and re-exploring or catching up on a few of the characters that we met in season one and updating their stories a year later.
Mm-hmm. When you mention or tackle things like capitalism, what do you want to say through the characters?
Well, it depends. In the episode that I feel is sort of, you know, it's asking the question of what is religion's connection to capitalism, or what is Christianity's connection to capitalism. And so that episode is being explored through the eyes of a senior in high school whose parents, as punishment, tell her she has to start going back to church with them. And when she starts going back to church and listening to Jesus's message of it's impossible for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven and all these ideas of charity and social causes, she starts to look at her own life and wonder whether her parents are actually following those teachings or whether they've been sort of twisted. And so that, you know, I mean, as a non-religious person, that episode was still really fun to kind of dig into, you know, a lot of the hypocrisies of some of those messages.
Talk about your honesty in bringing this series to television. This, I believe, is your first TV series. You had done independent feature films. What led you to do a series in the first place, and not just create the series, but really take on the big roles, producing it, writing every episode, directing every episode?
Well, I think one of the hesitations of doing television was the idea that I would lose control of a lot of the aspects of indie filmmaking that, you know, I'd sort of been able to do on a smaller budget and a smaller scale. So I had done a few director for hire television jobs and had really liked the experience of directing one-off episodes of TV, but I was afraid of the, you know, I suppose afraid of getting stuck with characters over a long period of time that I would lose interest in. And so, you know, having always done films and just finished them and moved on, the idea of television and sort of returning to the same characters for, you know, years in a row was a little intimidating to me. And so I was having a conversation with Billy Rosenberg, who's one of the, you know, associate producers on the show. And Billy was, you know, I was explaining everything I didn't like about television and, you know, over the course of that conversation, sort of landing on the idea of stripping away the things I didn't like and just focusing on the things I did like, which, you know, was the ability to tell stories over a long period of time. The format of the 30-minute, you know, short film as opposed to the ongoing narrative series, and kind of figuring out easy through starting with the things I didn't want to do and then kind of assessing what was left and seeing if those felt exciting. And now, you know, 2 seasons into it, I would say that this is, you know, probably the most exciting project I've worked on in my career and something that I foresee being a major project for me. If Netflix is interested in continuing to tell these stories, that I, you know, I could sort of do this thing endlessly, because the city is always changing, these characters are always growing, and there's just, you know, infinite potential for where we could go with the show.
Your experience reminds me of way back when The Twilight Zone had a writer-director named Montgomery Pittman. He was someone who started out as a writer, was in the late 1950s on various television shows, and he was very disgusted with how directors were treating his material. He made up his mind that from now on, I'm going to direct my own stuff. And he did some of the best episodes on Twilight Zone as a writer-director and in other places. And it sounds like a lot of what you went through to put this series on the air, the attitude toward I'm writing, I'm directing, I'm producing, sort of mirrors what he went through.
Yeah, I definitely feel connected to that. And it was a big part of my conversation with Netflix when I was pitching the show was, you know, I was not just pitching a creative idea. I was also pitching a production attitude and a whole, you know, concept of how, not just that the show would exist, but how I would make the show, who would be involved, how we would do it week to week, the fact that the dialogue would be improvised and that the thing would be changing constantly. And I knew that it was a bit of a weird pitch, but I also knew that, you know, I had my feature films to back me up in terms of, you know, proving that I could accomplish this on a low budget. And additionally, I felt that, I did have the means. I had built the experience of, you know, doing this in Chicago in a practical way, and that I could take that and translate it to television. So I was asking them to take a risk, and, you know, I'm ultimately really grateful that they decided that was worth it for them. I think it's a really neat show, and I'm hoping if we can do, you know, 10 years of it, that it would take on a quality sort of like Boyhood or the 7-Up documentary series or some of these ongoing investigations that use time as a major component of the storytelling. So, you know, despite the fact that I'm hoping season one and season two are already working, there's a part of me that's really dreaming about the show starting to really reveal what it's capable of doing over time when we start to see some of these characters age and some of these relationships that we start the show with change over time. And yeah, that there's a documentary aspect and a kind of ongoing aspect that's really, really exciting to me that I don't think I would be able to do in a feature film, or, you know, could only do by copying Boyhood, basically.
Hearing Joe Swanberg, he is the creator, producer, writer, director of Easy, his Netflix acclaimed unique anthology to be set in Chicago, where he is based, and it just started second season on that service, which is available on most smart TV sets and most smart TV devices. Joe joins us live from Chicago this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Live in a radio-specific interview. Finally, Apple Bound with you on this first day of December 2017. Happy you're aboard, wherever you're listening to us on Blog Talk Radio or the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And if you have a question or comment, Joe, get the call in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on the program, we'll feature Sci-Fi's new series, Happy, where a graphic novel turns into a television drama starring Chris Maloney of Law & Order SVU fame. We've got an exclusive interview with the executive producer and showrunner, Patrick McManus. And then we'll meet one of the people who made X-Men happen as an animated hit for Fox on Saturday mornings in the 1990s. He's just authored a brand new book about the experience. It's called Previously on X-Men. Eric LaWald will be with us in the second half of the hour. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow We Televise. How long did it take, Joe, to convince Netflix that you had something that was worth them putting on?
Well, the conversation with Kristen Zollner, who's one of my executives at Netflix, started in a more general way. I went in and met with her and started talking to her about a few ideas that I had, one of them being two brothers who start an illegal brewery in their garage and sort of, are kind of like dealing with the idea of this illegal underground business becoming more real. And, you know, I wasn't pitching her a show, but kind of just catching her up with things I was interested in. And then it wasn't until a year later that I went in and formally pitched Easy and pitched that Brewery Brothers storyline as one of the aspects of this anthology format. The pitch itself was maybe 30 minutes, but I think that it was another several months of negotiation because, you know, part of what was unique about pitching this show is that I did not know exactly what we would be doing. I think most shows go in with an outline for several seasons and a show Bible and all this information about exactly what they intend to do. And I was kind of saying, I would like to make this anthology formatted show. I don't know what the episodes will be about. I don't know who will be in it, but I have this idea that some of these characters know each other and that there's incidental overlap between the episodes. I know it would take place in Chicago and that we would sort of be doing these little morality plays or introducing these complications into these characters' lives and then sitting with them for half an hour while they figure that out. And so we talked a lot in general because there were no specifics, just to try and figure out, you know, what would a budget for a show like this be? How many days would it take to shoot an episode? What would Netflix know ahead of time versus what would be changing on set as we improvised? So there was a kind of long ongoing conversation to sort of hammer down those details, because I said to them, once we start, I'm going to need a lot of freedom. You know, I'm essentially going to need you guys to pay for a show that you don't know what it is. And then you're not going to know what it is until we finish an episode. So, you know, it's a big leap of faith, but it's been a really fun and kind of ongoing collaboration with them to hone in exactly what Easy is.
Because you're it, as far as the writer, the producer, the director, how much of Easy is based on your own experiences in Chicago, and how much of it is based on either other people you talk to in that city or your cast, many of whom, in fact, most of whom, are new faces for television?
Yeah, it's a big collaboration. I mean, I certainly am quality control all the way through the process. I am making sure that the show stays true to what I intended it to be, and I am sort of writing the initial outlines. But once the outlines get in the hands of the actors, I'm really asking them to own those characters, and they're improvising their own dialogue. We're certainly writing together day to day on set. And the same is true of Alex Orr, who produces the show with me, Mike Bruni, my first AD, Daniel Johnson and Harrison Atkins, who produce and edit with me. All of those voices are pretty major voices in the way that a final episode turns out. But, you know, I've had at this point 15 years of experience with this form of improv and this style of outline writing that we then modify on set. So I'm working with actors that I've worked with before in some cases on the feature film side, and asking them to come and do television for the first time, but also saying that it's not really going to be different than the way we made the movies. We're essentially utilizing the same techniques and telling a 30-minute story rather than a 90-minute story. So there's a lot of comfort with the crew and these collaborators that I've had for a long time, but we're all sort of figuring it out as we go. And I would say that I'm often just traffic cop in terms of making sure that all these disparate ideas come together in something that feels like a unified series.
Is there a secret, or is there a big do, big don't in terms of making improv work on television, the way you are doing it with Larry David,
yeah,
the years on Curb Your Enthusiasm and so forth?
I don't know that there are rules. I would say that there's a lot of different ways that improv is utilized, and one of the things that I am talking a lot to the actors about in terms of my own personal do's and don'ts is that I'm really not trying to use improv to gun for laughs or create, you know, these sort of waterfalls of jokes on top of jokes. And not that I don't like that, but, you know, the goal of Easy in most of my films is a kind of low-key naturalism, and the improv is really utilized to allow people to speak in their own voice, rather than me try and write dialogue and then ask them to perform that. I'm really creating a situation and then asking them to just live in that situation as realistically as possible. So I think it throws a lot of people, just in terms of a kind of dramatic improv as opposed to a comedy improv. And for me, a lot of the laughs, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm was a huge influence. That show came on HBO when I was a freshman in film school, and really radically altered my idea of how television could look, how it could be put together. Certainly when I go back and look at those early episodes now, I can't believe how lo-fi the show feels. But, you know, at the time it was such a breath of fresh air. It felt really real and spontaneous, and the qualities of the improv were really eye-opening for me. So, you know, using that and a couple other shows that came along in the meantime, I felt that I had a mold for how this could look on television, but also, unlike Curb Your Enthusiasm, which to me is ultimately about being funny, Easy is a little more dramatic than that and a little more real than that. And so, you know, I'm kind of asking people a lot of times to tone it down or to not be trying to find the humor, but to let the humor emerge from the awkwardness of a situation or even through the technical aspects of the editing or something like that. And so it's a really fun, nice process. And I feel like once people get the hang of it, it's really not stressful because they just have to exist.
What do people where you are in Chicago say about what you're doing? Do they come up to you in reacting to the first season as, yeah, you got this. You got the pulse of some of the people in this city in terms of what they deal with, whatever the issues they have in their life?
Yeah, it's nice when I hear that feedback. It's, you know, there's also a combination of that and the idea that we're not getting it because Chicago is such a big city and trying to do 8 episodes that represent the city is, you know, much too big of a task. So I feel that there is accurate criticism of the show that we are not doing a good enough job exploring the entire city. We're, you know, pretty heavily focused on certain Northside neighborhoods. And, you know, I would say if an audience is willing to be generous with us and give us time, it will take time for us to move around the city in a more comprehensive way. I am attempting to start with what I know and do a good job, at least in the early seasons, capturing and representing a Chicago that I can be specific about. And, you know, as I live here longer and get to know more people and explore the city myself, you know, I really am hoping that the show continues to expand and grow, but, you know, it's more important for me to get these episodes right in their specific context than to feel that it's my obligation to represent all of Chicago for everybody. So, you know, simultaneously, I'll hear, wow, this is like eavesdropping on me and my friends. And then I'll also hear, I don't relate to any of these characters and nothing in this show feels authentic to my Chicago. So, you know, a lot of it comes down to each season, what we ask ourselves and how we challenge ourselves on the production side versus the desire to follow up on characters we've already established and have the show kind of continue to explore storylines it's already set up. And it'll always be a balancing act. I mean, I think it's totally fair to criticize the show for not being a little, you know, more adventurous or getting around more, but I do hope that we will find our way there, and I also think it will take time.
Easy is Netflix's acclaimed anthology series set in Chicago, and you are hearing Joe Swanberg. He is the creator, producer, writer, and director. He is based in the Windy City, and that's where we find him this afternoon live here this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm Matt Van with you live from New York. Delighted you are with us on this first day of December here on Blog Talk Radio. We're also coming your way on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Joe, and then if it's remaining this half hour, get it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up next Friday on the program, there's an interesting special coming up on ABC later this month. It's called Encore. Here's the plot. People who did a musical back in the days of high school get reunited, and they have to do that same musical all over again, exactly the way they are. And it may become a new ABC series. We'll have an exclusive interview with the creator and executive producer of the program, Jason Cohen. And then you'll meet an entrepreneur out of San Francisco who put together a programming service based on one of the great art forms of music, the blues. And that series, and that project, the Blues Television Network, is about to go national through multicast channels and maybe smart TV sets and smart devices. E.C. Scott, the Chief Executive Officer of Blues Television Network, will join me next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. One of the things that is making Netflix the service that it is, Joe, is that it seems to be just as much intent on having talents like you find their voice with them as it is to get people like Spike Lee and Jim G. Cohan and David Fincher and the key writer-producer talents that they've lined up so far and are going to have in the years to come.
Yeah, I feel really lucky. I mean, I agree with you. I think that it's pretty incredible to have a platform with that much reach and that much money be interested in a plethora of programming and sort of aiming at a lot of different audiences. And so, you know, I sensed that, I think, when I went in and pitched Easy. I did not go around town and pitch that show to every network. I just went to Netflix and said, I really want to make this show for you guys. And so, you know, I could feel that they might be a good home and a place that was open to something different and something that, you know, as I said before, I didn't even really know exactly what it would be when I pitched it. I just knew that I had, that I was inspired and I had a feeling for how the show might function. And so, you know, they have been really amazing. I mean, I feel often that I sound like I'm just doing Netflix PR when I talk about them, but you know, I have experienced personally a very hands-off but supportive and encouraging environment over there where they trust me to make the show. They're busy. They're not, certainly not micromanagers. You know, they get what we're doing here, but anytime I need them, I find that they're there. Their notes have been, you know, very sharp and minimal. I don't get flooded with what feels like a bunch of corporate notes about, you know, audiences and blah, blah, blah that they need. Really, I feel that they're watching the show and trying to make it better. And, you know, I don't know what to say other than I feel really lucky that I found them at a time when they seem so open to all these fun new ideas. And I hope that as the culture changes and as that company continues to grow and figure itself out, that, you know, maybe I got in early enough that Easy will be a project that they grandfather in as we continue to figure ourselves out. But yeah, it's like, you know, really imagining in a time when people were so confused by Netflix and the idea, like when House of Cards came out, that all the episodes would be available at the same time, you know, all these kind of things that even I remember being like, what is going on over there? To now a few years later when it feels like a major network or a studio, you know, it's really neat to think that I'm able to be doing my weird little show with such a major force.
You, one final question, Joe. You're doing your weird little show in a place that has become a major production center thanks to the NBC Chicago shows from Dick Wolf, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, Med, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, have any of your actors have done those shows, or have you run across Dick Wolf or his crew in Chicago as you're doing your thing?
The crew, definitely, and actually we share some crew members. Some of the guys that I've been working with since Drinking Buddies also, you know, have spent time on the Dick Wolf shows. And I don't know about that much actor overlap just because I think that those people are often busy on the Dick Wolf shows all year. And I've never met him personally. I mean, I cannot imagine what that guy's workload must be. He's really a pretty intimidating figure in my mind because he just has so much going on all the time. But, you know, it's been really amazing for the city. I'll say, you know, from my end, remembering before those shows came along, and there's Empire here now and a lot of other big shows that are shooting in Chicago, it's so nice that the crew in this city is able to work year-round, and it actually allows a lot of these people to take a pay cut and come work on my stuff because they feel so confident that there will be jobs where they can make their real day rates and support their families and do all of that. So, you know, without even realizing it, Dick Wolf has, or maybe he does realize it, I'm sure he's a really smart guy, but, you know, through doing all of those shows here in Chicago, he's additionally enabled the independent film scene to work with more talented crew and to sort of steal some of these guys from his productions for smaller projects, and that they have, you know, this nice year-round source of work now.
Easy. Now in its second season, as of today, on Netflix. And Netflix is available on most smart TV sets and most smart TV devices. So check out if it is available where you are. And for more details about the show and the service online, go to www.netflix.com. It's www.netflix.com. Easy. Now in season two, as Netflix likes to say, same city, new position. By the way, I want to mention some of the cast members of the program, these latest episodes. People like RG Plaza, Dave Franco, Aida Cash, Judy Greer, Kate Berlant, and many, many more. Many of them new faces to television. Joe Swanberg, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on getting season two off the ground. Hava Hines said it's the second part of what hopefully will be a very long-running series for you, your cast, and crew. It's been a delight having you with us.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Great talking to you.
You too. Enjoy the weekend. Take care.
Thanks.
Joe Swanberg, creator, producer, writer, and director of Easy on Netflix, joining us live from Chicago. More Tomorrow Show Live coming your way, but first, some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. One of the great treats at the Rio Olympics last year was the wonderful gymnast Allie Raisman. Well, now, Raisman's story is now told in a new book called Fierce, which she wrote, and you can get it audio style through a subscription to audibletrialaudible.com. And all it takes is using this URL, www.audibletrial.com/televised. Audible is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and certainly inspiration. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from, like Fierce by Allie Raisman, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. So just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, get that one free audio book, like Fierce, a one-month trial of service, and great customer service with Audible Zone by Amazon.com. At Audible, listening is the new reading, and Audible will transform the way you hear the world, and it makes a great holiday gift, whether it's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever. So do yourself a favor. Make listening the new reading where you are, and check out Audible.com by going to this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up on our next half hour, our very good friend in the world of interactive TV, Tracy Swedlow. Her annual TV Tomorrow Show in New York happens next Thursday. I'll be there covering it and be on a panel. And we'll get Tracy on the line here in New York after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to Western Radio on the planet, www.blogtalk.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Up to Me magazine. It's a show with all sorts of topics, music, entertainment, all sorts of great stuff. Check it out tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific time, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you get the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. We're also coming your way on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Check out our recent episodes at iHeartRadio.com. Put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click it, you're right there, or go to podcast at the top of the iHeartRadio page screen, and then go to entertainment under categories, and you will find us there. Welcome back for the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this first day of December 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live from New Web, New York. Got a question or comment for our next guest? Ring it in, 646-652-2906. That number's good anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the world. You're on Blog Talk Radio. Or go to our chat room. It's open and available for you. SimonApple04. You will find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. It's around this time of year that an interesting event takes place. It's called the TV of Tomorrow Show New York. It's one of two events that my next guest puts on every year. When she's not doing that, she is the founder and overseer of the very popular website and newsletter Interactive TV Today, and she also does some radio interviews, too, right here on Blog Talk Radio. So first, welcome back here in New York, getting ready for TV Tomorrow Show, and why, our very good friend, Tracy Swedlow. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Simon. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. Great to have you here. Do you think, given that now 60% or more of all U.S. households have a smart TV set, a smart TV device, and more of these sets and devices are putting in Siri and Alexa and Google Assistant and Bixby and other artificial intelligence processes into the set or the device, that maybe, just maybe, we may be at the birthplace finally of interactive TV?
Yes, I completely agree with that. I mean, interactive TV has been coming on since, you know, the late 70s with Cube in Columbus, Ohio, was my hometown. But and there's been many ups and downs. But voice really is going to transform the television, and artificial intelligence specifically. We're certainly going to be focusing on that at the show. You're going to be in the session where we'll discuss that. And we're looking forward to doing more with that topic going forward in our other events. I think it's going to be a real opportunity for development.
We also are coming off a Black Friday and a Cyber Monday where it looks like smart TV sets and devices were one of the hot items, even though a lot of the reporting, whether it was by online or print or television, seemed to discount that whole situation. And on a call that I had with the panel, people who will be on the panel, I raised this subject, and we've raised it here on this program and other places, that it seems that despite the fact that you have this incredible base of people who are now using these smart sets and devices, the usage is more frequent, how often they do it, how many hours a day, how many days in a month, what they're doing, the apps that are being created for these devices, and again, the introduction of artificial intelligence, it just seems that nobody... That a lot of journalists are bypassing the subject, TV conferences are not covering the subject, and even the smart TV set makers and device makers seem to be not really getting into the idea of publicizing what they're doing. Are you getting the sense where you are that that is happening? And if so, why? Why when you have this base and so many people now into the whole idea of interactivity, that you're not letting them know what's going on, that what they can do?
Well, I think that's a great question, and it's many pronged. First of all, I would say that these companies who are involved in the business of delivering interactive television over what we call the OTT boxes, like Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, Apple TV, you know, and the content companies that supply that are just completely focused, and all their budgets are focused on delivering the content, right, and finding the best new show. And I think that there's not enough money being placed in getting the public to understand how to use it. Second of all, I think that they think the public's just going to figure it out. Once they buy the box, they're just going to, you know, click right in. I think there's a huge opportunity to discuss it, to, you know, create entertainment, promotional entertainment that motivates and inspires people about what's possible. And believe me, you said that TV conferences don't cover it. Well, we cover these topics all the time through our publication, Interactive TV Today, and through our conferences. So we're dedicated to understanding why this is. I think these really large companies, I just think that they're distracted with trying to enable the advertising, their advertising agenda, and the artificial intelligence, you know, all the technologies that are underneath enabling them to monetize the delivery of content only. And so getting their viewers to understand the interactive possibilities or more what they could do, it's kind of like, it seems like it's lower on their list of priorities, which I think is wrong.
Tracy, repeat your answer again, because for some reason we got cut off. Our line broke. We just rebooted. Welcome back to Margaret Tellers, everyone. Simon Applebaum with Tracy Swedlow. When you repeat your answer, ask this. Does that give reporters who cover television and technology a pass in terms of not covering the medium? Because it seems that that's one of the big issues, is that we as a group are not covering, whether it's people from the Wall Street Journal or USA Today or CNBC or Bloomberg or the websites like RecodeNews.com. It seems if we cover it all, it's a one-and-done story. It's not ongoing. And you just get a sense that people think maybe smart TV is not sexy. And I'm wondering, is the public finding out about what you can do more than we are?
What I would say is that the technology journalists, the TV technology journalists, who cover this industry, they seem to be, except for us, I mean, they're primarily focused on the industry, the conglomeration, the net neutrality, the latest announcement about who's merging with who, who's, you know, what technology is coming out. The TV consumer journalists, I think, are busy just covering, you know, the latest show, the latest sexual deviance from, you know, this or that star on any of these programs. I think there aren't enough people who are really dealing with how the consumers are embracing this technology. I think you're absolutely right that they have forgotten the audience as a group of people who need to know how to use all this.
Do you believe that people are discovering how to use smart TVs, how to use smart devices, and particularly how to use apps, which, for example, will allow you to play video games or to order merchandise or to order services like Airbnb and Zillow and Gilt Group and Uber?
Well, there's a huge spectrum of what people know how to do. You know, I mean, they have been educated about how to navigate for content, right? That's been coming on since we, you know, the first EPGs, electronic programming guides. But to be able to buy content on TV, you know, the interfaces, the technology, it really hasn't been there, because T-commerce is what we call it in the industry, has come up and down and up and down. And we, you know, at Interactive TV Today and TV of Tomorrow, we, you know, we study what's happening. So we know who's doing something right. We know where, you know, when we see good examples of this. But as an entire industry, there haven't been a lot of examples where the consumer feels comfortable to purchase things over a TV. It doesn't mean that it's not possible, because we, like I said, we see good examples, but they are familiar with buying things on the internet. They are familiar with using transaction gateways like Apple Pay, PayPal, Samsung, whatever, you know, versions of wallets they are. I mean, people are familiar with doing digital transactions or, you know, other things besides buying stuff. I don't think that the technology and the promotion and the marketing of those possibilities has been very visible, which I think is, it hasn't done anybody any, you know, positive service, because I know a lot of companies are putting a lot of money into enabling that on, let's say, DirecTV or even on Apple TV, right? But I do think that when we see a revolution occur, which we will see once ATSC 3.0 is installed, which is a big topic at our next conference next Thursday, December 7th, ATSC will enable the local TV producers and many other content producers really transform local television and the business of linear television, which still exists for many millions of people. So I think you're going to see a major transformation in the next few years.
Tracy Swedlow is the founder and overseer of Interactive TV Today. It's email, it's newsletters, it's websites. It's also radio interviews right here on Blog Talk Radio. And she's also the proprietor of the semi-annual TV Tomorrow Show. It takes place in both Silicon Valley and coming up next Thursday here in New York at the School of Visual Arts Theater in Midtown Manhattan. Tracy joins me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Applebaum live with you from the Big Apple. And if you have a question or comment for Tracy, don't be shy. Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming your way on Monday's show, we'll have Patrick Maness. He's the executive producer and showrunner of Happy. It's the graphic novel turned sci-fi drama series starring Christopher Maloney of 1SVU fame. And then we'll hear from one of the key people behind Fox's animated sensation of the 1990s, X-Men. It was the first Marvel animated show to make it. Ran for 3 seasons on Fox. And now he's the author of a book celebrating the 20th anniversary of that series called Previously on X-Men. That's Eric LaWalt. And we may offer his book as a prize for our next classic trivia question contest on Monday. That's all coming up to UK Eastern New Pacific on Monday the 4th, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. ATSC 3.0 was passed by the Federal Information Commission last month. How fast do you think this is going to take off? Whether it's TV stations offering their content to smart TV sets and devices, or perhaps offering interactive services, how big a deal is ATSC 3.0 to television?
I think it's going to be a huge deal. I don't think it's going to happen super quick unless companies like Sinclair, which will or do own 80% of the local TV stations in the nation because they recently purchased Tribune Broadcasting, they have in their best interest to help subsidize the inclusion of an ATSC 3.0 chip. Yeah, I believe you need a chip, a tuner chip or a chip, you know, to go in all of these devices. So my guess is it's going to be gradual, but it'll pick up steam once people are able to monetize the advertising.
Yeah. As you said, you're going to have a major super session on that with one of the key people at Sinclair, with the biggest station TV group in your country, you said, as part of that. That'll be on Thursday afternoon. It looks like something else that may break loose, though, is interactive advertising. We know Hulu is developing a T-commerce concept where if you're watching an ad for a movie theater and you want to order tickets to that night's debut, let's say, at a theater near you, you can pop something on the screen and use your remote control or use artificial intelligence like Siri or Alexa and order the ticket to the TV set. We know that there's a company called Kinect that's going to show up at your thing, which is also working on interactive ads, and there may be a few other folks that are doing it. Are we prepared for a breakout next year? Do you think that we're going to see some interactive advertising experiments?
If they make it fun, you know, I mean, and dependable. So I can imagine, you know, if somebody is watching something and they gamify the experience, it's like, hey, do you want to order this? And they talk back to you and you've got Alexa in the room or you've got, you know, whatever device and you order it and then Alexa talks back to you and then something clicks on the TV and connects. ACR technology picks up you know, something that you're watching on TV, it's all connected to Alexa data, and then something happens on your TV, all in lightning time, and people feel like they're sort of surrounded by their ability to command the screen, I think, yeah, it'll explode. But, I mean, I think people are going to want to do a hell of a lot more things than just buy stuff. I mean, I've seen a lot of experiments over the years where companies will try advertising first because it's monetizable content. So I think somebody out there needs to enable a game experience with sound and ACR, which is what Kinect offers, and voice all at the same time. And then I think we'll see, you know, a hit show, right? And then you'll see it take off.
Yeah. Well, let's talk content, Tracy, because a few weeks ago, Steven Soderbergh, the famous independent film director, introduced an app that is available on Apple TV and on mobile devices called Mosaic, and allows you to create, from scratch, your own miniseries. You get the characters, you get the plot, you get the plot direction, and Steven says, all right, use this app, do what you want, you know, create your own show. And Soderbergh will be creating his own version of Mosaic on HBO next month. We know, by the way, that Soderbergh is going to do two more of these Mosaic projects in 2018. We also know about Echo, which is a venture that Samsung and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer are involved with, where you can, at various points of a program, choose which way that program goes. It's available, I think, on mobile and on websites right now, but at some point, I would think, with Samsung as an owner, that they would put on Samsung smart TV sets and make it available to smart TV sets and devices. And yet, I'm amazed that, I know Echo was at your event in New York last year, but it's amazing to me that even with Steven Soderbergh, again, we're not seeing a lot of press about this. What do you think about interactive storytelling? Are we at the point where we may see the first examples of choose-your-own-adventure or make-your-own-adventure programming?
It's a complicated question. You know, Netflix put out this last year a couple of shows, I think, kids' shows, because they'd licensed choose-your-own-adventure from the owner of that those book series, right, or the intellectual property. And they did a little bit of promotion for it. There certainly were a few articles here and there. We covered it, but it seemed just very buried. And it's either because people were, you know, didn't know it was there, or because the people who did know didn't know what to do with it. I don't know, and I've tried to get some information from Netflix about it, but they're very close-lipped. So I will say that Choose Your Own Adventure, of course, as a concept, has been around a very long time. And there, I've seen other experiments in the past where people would create an elaborate plot, characters, could upload your own videos, you could create your own interactive storyline using video. I've seen so many different experiences where the entire group would be in a circle on the screen at the same time, and everybody would tell stories and upload videos, and there'd be text in the middle. So I think that the Steven Soderbergh project Mosaic, great. He's a well-known name. I'd say, you know, go forward. We'll see. I would say that journalists in general, not us, because we're interested in it, but a lot of journalists, you know, I say that they shy away from this kind of experimentation because it scares them. It's not easy. It's something that they can you have to do, right? And a lot of people just want passive entertainment, and they don't watch much of that. But there is a huge audience, I think, being underserved, people who want to engage in immersive, interactive entertainment. You see that in the rise of VR, actually. It just is going to be the right form of storytelling. And there's a huge amount of work that goes on all over the world where people are experimenting with interactive storytelling. All you have to do is look up those terms, and you will find a plethora of things happening all around the globe.
I remember in the 1980s, Tracy, covering ACTV from John Lack, one of the former people at War Amex Entertainment. We just did Q back in the 70s. And it looked like that was going to go on, especially with ESPN getting involved with it. Unfortunately, it did not. So, yeah, I totally get that we've had these experiments on and off, and it's like when it fails, okay, it sort of reiterates, nope, you shouldn't cover this because you're going to get really disappointed.
But you know what, Simon? You know what, Simon? Wait, Simon, I'm going to interrupt for a second. What really actually pissed me off is that YouTube, right, for the many years, had a technology called annotations, horrible name for it, annotations, that would allow anybody using YouTube pretty much to create, or the content creators, to create interactive with text, linking to other videos, creating games. A lot of people tricked out the system in such a way that they were to create weird stories, puppet shows, magic games. I mean, there was a huge amount of creativity that I saw emerge on YouTube's platform as annotations, but this last year they got rid of it. Now, why is that? And I don't understand. There was like at least a million experiments, I think. I don't know. We've had the inventors of annotations. We've had people who were in charge of it. It was being used by the advertising agencies a lot, right, to do immersive, interactive advertising pieces. It was an explosion of interactive creativity using video, using television, interactive TV. And I don't have an answer as to why they pulled it, but the only thing I can think is that they didn't want to support it. It cost them a lot of money for some reason on their servers, or they couldn't figure out how to monetize it, which is the most likely candidate. You tell me.
I don't know. But it's definitely something worth exploring, and certainly maybe somebody from YouTube might want to get on the horn and talk about it. I wanted to ask you about a technology that we showcased on this program last month and a company that's trying to really exploit that and several others in similar. But first, augmented reality and virtual reality. We hear a lot about it. The headgear so far, mixed reaction to it. And yet we're still not hearing about efforts to do VR and AR on the television set. At any point, do you think we're going to see virtual reality or augmented reality on the television set? Could that, in fact, be the maybe that you have this base, again, of smart TV set and device users? Maybe that might be the way that for many, many people, they see VR and AR.
You know, I've been covering VR since the early 90s. I was part of the early days when it was, exciting experiment. And so I've seen it go up and down, and now it's sort of up and down. It's not monetizing. However, there's a lot of passion, interest, and investment. Now, I would say, will there be VR or AR on the TV, the big TV screen? Probably AR, most likely. But AR really is something that you use when you've got a different device, when you can walk around, when you've got a mobile phone, because you need a screen to interface with a video background. VR is really another platform. I would say it's not going to appear on your TV necessarily. Maybe you can access it through your TV. I could be wrong about that, but I think it's additionally a platform separate. However, I used to see experiments from different companies who were trying to enable 3D immersive experiences without head-mounted displays, HMDs, which are those big things that sit on your head. So I still think it's possible. But then someday I think you won't have a TV screen in your house. You might have a screen in your house, but you might just have a head-mounted display or some form of glass or something or contacts embedded in your eyes. And there are various visualizing videos out there that show you the future about that, where the TV or the VR is installed in your eyes and you experience it with no glass interface, you know, with no huge. So yes and no to your question.
Before we wrap, Tracy, last month we introduced people on this program to Singular DTV. It's an organization that is trying to blend cryptocurrency to the Ethereum blockchain technology into an end-to-end way in which TV content, entertainment, programming, and apps could be put together, created, developed, financed, promoted, publicized, and ultimately distributed to people. Does blockchain and cryptocurrency, what CTV is trying to do, could that have a role to play in how interactive TV goes?
All I can say is that we did a blockchain session at our last show in San Francisco around the 23rd and 24th, and it was standing room only.
What does that say about the possibility that in fact could become maybe a key to how fast interactive TV moves from here?
I would say I'm not an expert on that particular topic, but I would say that the people who come to our conferences, the people who speak at our conferences, are interested, And if they're interested, they're being told by even people above them, if there is anyone above them, that they need to know. So I would say watch this space.
Yeah, agreed. When CBTV had an event, a panel at the recent International Emmy Awards Festival here in New York, it was also in a room with almost standing room only. And people were like outside, like trying to get in. It was a very small room, but there was a lot of interest in what they're doing, and we're following what they're up to, because it could become maybe a way that interactive television projects might get financed, developed, and ultimately to the American public. If you want to know more about the CBS Tomorrow Show, which happens next Thursday here in New York at the School of Visual Arts Theater of Midtown Manhattan, here's where you go online, www.thecbstomorrowshow.com. That's www.thecbstomorrowshow.com. It's also where you can find out more about what Tracy does and her day job as the founder and editor-in-chief of Interactive TV Today, and also check out her blog talk radio shows as well on that very site. Tracy, a wonderful pleasure as always to have you around this time every year. Happy start of the holiday season, and I'll see you in person here in New York next Thursday.
Yes, you'll be at our speaking at our event, Simon, and you're just so full of passion and information, and you understand this industry, and we're all lucky to have you as a member of the community, as a leader.
Thank you so much, Tracy. Ditto you and what you're up to with you and Richard and your whole staff. All the greatest. Take care. Have a super weekend, and we'll catch you on Thursday.
All right. Have a good weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tracy Predlow from Interactive TV Demand, the TV Tomorrow Show, joining us live here in New York. And once again, TV Tomorrow Show happens next Thursday at the School of Visual Arts Theater in Midtown Manhattan. TVTomorrowShow.com has all the information. If you're in the New York area, check it out. I will be covering it, and I'll be on a panel in that afternoon. Coming up Monday on Tomorrow Televised, we will have Patrick McManus, executive producer and showrunner of Sci-Fi's new drama with Chris Maloney, Happy, based on the same graphic novel. And Erica Wolfe, who worked on X-Men, the original animated series from Fox in the 1990s, now the author of the brand new book, previously on X-Men. And coming your way on next Friday's show, we'll have Jason Cohen, the creator executive producer of the new ABC special Encore, could become a series in 2018, and the head of the Blues Television Network, now operating in San Francisco, soon around the country, E.C. Scott. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast edition. You'll find it at the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. Right there for you, 24/7. Also at iTunes and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. Incidentally, Apple is opening up a brand new Apple store near the Barclays Center here in Brooklyn. It opens up tomorrow. Check it out if you can. It's right near Atlantic Avenue and Brooklyn Academy Music and all those wonderful places in downtown BKLYN. Again, it opens tomorrow. And good luck to the Apple folks in there. So if you don't have Apple TV in Brooklyn, go to the Apple store there or order it online. Remember, you can check out my columns at MediaDose.com. That's MediaDose.com. You can also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. And you can also email me, SimonApple04@Yahoo.com. New Class 3 Question of the Week coming away on Monday, so be prepared for that as well. Remember, we love hearing from you because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants. Now through the Blog Talk Radio. Our producer is Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio General Manager. Jay Sonberg, Executive Content Producer. And the co-founder of BTR, Alan Levy and Bob Charish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a super weekend. Back Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Until the next time.